Hi, and welcome to Prosody, 90.5 FM's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Gretchen Primack. Gretchen Primack's new book is entitled Kind and is published by Post Traumatic Press. She's also the author of Doris's Red Spaces, which is forthcoming from May Apple Press in 2014, and The Slow Creaking of Planets from Finishing Line. She co-authored The Lucky Ones, My Passionate Fight for Farmed Animals with Jenny Brown, Penguin Avery, 2012. Her poems have appeared in the Paris Review, Prairie Schooner, Field, Antioch Review, Plowshares, the Massachusetts Review, and many other journals. She lives in New York's Hudson Valley. Hi, Gretchen. How are you?
I'm great, Jan. It's lovely to be here.
Yeah, we're really happy to have you all the way from the Hudson Valley. And I knew you were reading in a number of places, so I'm glad that you came to Pittsburgh. You are going to read some books from some poems from your new book, Kind. So
yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Let me start with one called The Absence of Unnecessary Hurting. This is the press of the earth, one star hanging there, honking like a goose. The lake a smudge of black juice, the hill a draped pancake. Frogs sing, sharp and gutty. Night, clean air, clear water, five baby mink in a pile snoring. Overwhelm can be dug from sludge below dock. On either side, fruits slung over branches glued to their seeds. Here in the slurry live the things I consider, here in the hills. What do people think of? What do they think of me in my carings? Ripples lunch on each other, heavenly body lights flicker, too cool for moths. I don't want to hurt things, the fine brown eye of an animal, the broad slick leaf of a wing. I'd like to be gentle here. I want to be worthy of you, lovely ground. Bury my face in your tired, broken bread. So this is really a book about the dynamic between humans and the other animals on the planet. And, you know, I think a lot about the way that we as a species have chosen to interact with the other species that we share the planet with. It's for me a matter of saying, are animals here for us or are they here with us? And for me, it's a resounding with us. So here's a poem called God's Glory. It's got an epigraph from my favorite poet, Edna St. Vincent Millay. Loved her since I was just a wee one. And this is actually from a play that she wrote, and one of the characters says, "With what shall we pay our entrance into an exclusive paradise from which the beaver and the ant are barred?" God's Glory. You would scoff at those who care for small things, the mouse you killed. Only aren't you small, your soft chest and your skull balancing on its skeleton? I wish there were a God, a mighty, hoary he, showing that you are as small as a brown mouse whose home you fastened upon and whom you killed there. I wish an awesome God could show you what is small. So I'm going to move from the small to the rather large. This poem is called Big Pig, and it starts with epigraphs as well, this time from Pablo Neruda. And, you know, the pig is a much maligned animal, and I think people don't really interact with them, or they would know, and I know this because I work with farm animal sanctuaries, that, you know, they're really smart, and they have families and communication and enjoy their lives and feel pain and pleasure, and they somehow seem to be the farm animal species that is sort of most detested in a way. And here's Big Pig. And here are the epigraphs first. Pablo Neruda said, in this way, we are going nowhere. To survive like this holds no glory. And he also says in another poem, I want to talk to the pigs. Big pig, smart and fattened to grotesque. I'm not better than you, though I am different. I can speak rage. I can build your crate. You reason like a preschooler, but he can ask for ham and a mother oblige. Pig, you will not see a son in your life. You will not know space or mother. They will fatten you on harrowing and hang you by a foot. They will hack your neck and you will struggle until your body tears from its leg and your foot unleashes from its strap and you pitch to your own thick blood. And the man with the knife, in his sadness, he will kick and kick you and the 10 after you and the 10 after, the 10 and 10 after, speaking his rage. Die, heartbreaking beast. So I want to linger a little bit with that man, the man whose job it is to kill and to dismember and process the body of this sentient being, this 1,000-pound pig. And in our culture, as you can imagine, the people who are tasked with doing that, with making it so that people can eat bacon in the morning, are the most vulnerable people in our society, because that's who is put in a position where they are able to do this work. And this matters very much to me as a past labor organizer and someone who thinks a lot about workers' rights and just human rights, animal rights, social justice for sentient beings. It's really, and Human Rights Watch agrees with me, hell. This job is hell. So here's a poem that discusses the people who end up in the job of growing, killing, and processing animals and their emissions for our pleasure. The workers. An undocumented immigrant, an illiterate mother, a hungry 13-year-old, and a sadist walk into a slaughterhouse. It's the first rung of the American ladder, says the first. Walmart's done hiring, says the second. School's not working, says the third, and neither is Dad. Finally, a place, says the last, where I won't be punished. The first sees the pig's leg dislocate as she's hung. Physics. He feels it in his own leg. He feels her blood down his neck. The second feels the chick tremble as she sears off his beak with a hot blade. She feels it in her face. The third did not know a cow could make that sound, the death sound he now knows he will make one day. The fourth slams a chicken against a wall. And again, the fourth sits his weight on a calf too sick to stand, shoves his finger up into a turkey again and again. The first has his arm caught in a machine. The second has a finger cut off along a beak. The third can't leave his room. And the fourth slams a chicken against the wall, grinds his heel into a turkey, shoves his fist up into a calf again and again.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Gretchen Primack. She's reading poems from her new book, Kind, published by Post Traumatic Press. And I wanted to ask you, Gretchen, about some things the listeners can't see. The cover of your book is a great, I guess, painting, mm-hmm. and with animals on the cover. If you could, and inside there are sketches of other animals. If you could talk about the collaboration that you have with Susan Siegel.
Susan Siegel is a remarkable artist out of New York City. And I became familiar with her work a few months before I was putting the finishing touches on this book. And I was in love with her oil paintings, which often, well, in this series, have animals in a very Rococo style. They are posed. They're wearing beautiful 18th century garments. This cover features a family of three, and the painting is called Family of Three. And the father is a bull, and he looks very regal. And the mother is a goat, and she's cocking her head slightly. She's wearing a green gown. And then they've got this fabulous hybrid daughter who looks like she's probably wearing Converse sneakers under her yellow dress. And it's just a beautiful portrait, and I thought it captured this book very well. And Susan not only gave me permission to use this painting as the cover of the book, but she also wanted to see the manuscript. And when she read it, she decided that she wanted to, in a sense, collaborate, have a conversation between the art and the poems. And she created beautiful original drawings that are spread out throughout the book. And I could not be happier with that.
Yeah, it's really great. And the listeners will have to go get the book to see it. But, you know, this idea of collaboration seems to be very large with you. For example, you have a lot of epigraphs in your book. So this idea of a conversation within the book, within the poems, with other writers seems to be large. And then, you know, larger than that, you know, the connections and conversations, I would say, you know, between the humans and the animals in the book. And, you know, not to analyze all this too much, but, you know, your history as a labor organizer and working in prisons. And so I guess one question I have is, do you feel that you're sort of like a social worker who writes, or do you identify primarily as a writer who is doing all this work in the world?
I think they coexist very comfortably. They hang out on the same sofa, in my very comfortable sofa, mm-hmm. Within me. So I'm a writer, and I'm also someone who works towards social justice and who thinks a lot about power dynamics and doesn't draw a line the way I think a lot of progressives do between species. So, mm-hmm. you know, more in the spirit of Cesar Chavez, who was vegan because he was in favor of social justice and saw animals. Coretta Scott King, mm-hmm. vegan, you know, people who work towards animal rights and human rights because they're so profoundly linked that to work for social justice in their eyes could not ignore those issues. So as Albert Schweitzer asked us to expand our circle of compassion to include other sentient beings. So, you know, there are definitely progressives who do that, but I think not enough.
Mm-hmm. And to express that in your writing, was that a choice, an obsession,
Such an interesting question. I wrote for years without combining those two things within me. And then I was compelled. Actually, that poem, God's Glory, was the first of this book that I wrote, and it came out of a real situation. It was at an artist colony, you know, writer's residency, and sure enough, someone killed a mouse who had been annoying him. And I thought, you know, this isn't even your house. You're here for a month. This is that mouse's house. And, you know, so, and that is not a conventional view of things. We mm-hmm. sort of take as our right the fact that we should be able to kill what we want, when we want, for no reason other than annoyance or the pleasure of the palate or that kind of thing. But I felt so distant from him and sort of that philosophy that I was compelled to put pen to paper about it. And that got me started. I said, well, why wouldn't I combine these things? I think I was afraid to be seen as a polemicist and, oh, I mean, you know how it is with writers who try to write beyond craft. In this book, I'm thinking as much about craft and poetry as I am about the issues, the same way Wilfred Owen thought about craft and poetry when he was protesting World War I, you know.
Okay. Could you read some more poems?
I'd be happy to. I want to do a little series of poems in this about motherhood and mothers. And this is another place where we divide very, very starkly along species lines so that human mothers are given a very well-deserved respect and animal mothers are given a really awful life. If we want the milk of a cow, we get her pregnant and we take her baby away so we can have that milk. If we want piglets or puppies, we get a mother pregnant and have her babies and then take them away. So it's an interesting divide, and it really affects, obviously, their lives and our lives, too. So this is a poem called Love This, and it also has an epigraph. It's from Stanley Kunitz, and he said in a poem, "If you permit this evil, what is the good of your life? The body floods with chemicals saying, love this. And she does, and births it. It is a boy. She begins to clean and nose. But he is dragged away by his back feet. She will never touch him again, though she hears him howl and calls back for days. But her breast milk is banked for others. Her son is pulled away to lie in his box. He will be packed for slaughter. How ingenious we are to make product from byproduct, make use of the child, kill and pack and truck him to plates. And when her gallons slow, we start over and her body says, love this, and she does, though in a moment she will never touch him again. His milk is not for him. And when the milk slows too slow, she will join him on the line, pounds of ground. And how we will dine and talk of our glossy dogs. Her body will break up on our forks as mothers beg us for the grain we stuffed her with. And children beg us for the water scouring her blood from the factory walls. And when her wastes and gases and panic heat our air so hot our world stops breathing, then will we stop? Then will we grow kind, let the air cool, and mothers breathe? I just want to mention that reference at the end to what this cow is doing to our planet is based on the fact that animal agriculture accounts for tremendous amount of global warming. It's one of the top 2 to 3 causes of global warming. Something else to think about as we dine. This poem is called Mother 2. Only humans, mother. Only we care for our babies. Everything else spits out young. Thank God you're here, they say. Please rid me of my children. Sell them. Cage them. Kill them. Take my useless milk, my pups. Take my eggs, crack them, fry them up. Only you, mother. I just lay, squeeze out. I'm a vessel, a factory, a vending machine. Take my young, profit from them. Here's a mother poem in a bit of a different spirit. This is called Phoebe Fledges. I'm lucky to share my life with a really fabulous human who shares my love of creatures, both human and non-human. And this is called Phoebe Fledges. This is for their mama who left them the only way she would have. By dying. and for the two fledges who could not live that way, and for the two who tried and cried out, and for my husband, who heard them and hung the nest high in the house, who knew what would happen and fed them anyway, through the night, through the mites and shiverings, and who buried them in their nest, my kind love, who loves so hard.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Gretchen Primack. She's reading from her new book, Kind, which, as she has said, deals with the dynamic between humans and other animals on the planet. Thinking about these mother poems, I guess I want to challenge you a little bit about some of the mother stuff, and as in complicating the human mothers, because I think that mothers are sanctified in this culture in a way that doesn't help women and doesn't help mothers. And there are plenty of mothers that are not great, and children are often packed up and shipped and sold and killed and sold into slavery too. So,
yeah.
So your intro to that poem, as in human mothers are treated in this one way and animal mothers are not, I guess I want to push you to complicate that a little bit or talk about it.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. And of course, I'm shorthanding with the
the
tight schedule. But it's true. It's just I think we decry the fact that that happens. I think we say in our society, it's awful that a woman gave birth to a child and her child was sold into slavery. Or it's awful that a woman gave birth to a child and that child is not going to have a great life for X, Y, and Z reasons. And we should be upset about it. And we should be working incredibly hard to make sure that it doesn't happen.
I have to own that some of this, you know, I do write about adoption issues, so I want to say that, but I think that I don't think we do that.
You don't think we do it?
Decry it. Mm-hmm. And I think adoption is just celebrated. And and the erasure of the child is not talked about as the, you know, the disappearing animal, the disappearing children. I think there's a lot of connection there.
Yeah.
So I guess I would vote for a poem about, that connection between human and animals. I don't know if you're writing more animal poems. Are you still?
You know, I am a bit, and that is intriguing and would be wonderful. I mean, I think my response is they're both awful. And
sure,
I guess
so
we should be talking more about both of them.
Sure.
You know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm really interested in the idea of project, because I think it's really hard to write a whole book about something and make it work. And I think you've done that with this book. So I'm wondering if you, wrote like 10 poems and said, do I have to, write, 30 more on this? Or it just started coming and then just kept coming? Or, you know, how much did you have an idea of project, or you just kept writing poems?
I think by the time I had written three or four, I had an idea of project, but I wasn't pushing it too hard. I wasn't shoving it into a box. It took many years to write this book because I was writing other poems too.
Okay.
And so if poems weren't fitting, fine. But if there was more that I wanted to say about this, then I would. And so by the time I approached, really a manuscript, I had a great deal of poems that felt that they came organically. And some of the poems in this book are really about what it's like to be the kind of person who cares about this in a culture that doesn't.
Right. I think there's a range of poems in this book. I mean, they have to do with animals, but so many different aspects. We have time for a couple more poems.
All right. Well, how about a poem about a cat? You know, there's poems in here about all kinds of animals, not just farm animals. There's a poem in the voice of a circus elephant, and there are wild animals and domestic animals. And this is about a stinky old cat who is one of the many loves of my life. This is called Marie. Here is an old cat, a lump on my lap, a wisp, a shrub on the world, a center only to me, myself only a shrub on the world, a wisp of lint in its long afternoon. Her cat things will fade out, the grooming tugs and snorts, the winter curl and heat stretch, how she leans her face against my face and relaxes it there. Like my human things will fade out, the hair tucking, cake icing, the pen to paper. And neither of us will mean, though she means and means to me now, and I make her content, and she me. So if I can go back to farm animals, you know, you were asking if I still wrote, well, about animals, obviously I still write. I'm actually starting to write about the prison where I worked in a maximum security men's prison for many years teaching, and didn't write about that the whole time I was there. Now that I'm not anymore, I'm starting to write about it. But I am still writing about animals, and I was actually asked to write a poem by a project called 46millionturkeys.com is their site, to write a poem about a turkey, and I hadn't in the book, so I was happy to take on that challenge. This also has an epigraph. Like you said, I love conversing with other poets in my work. And this one is from Adrienne Rich from Dream of a Common Language, in which she says, "But gentleness is active, will not be driven off, keeps bearing witness calmly." Thanksgiving. If she tips her face into rain, she pulls it back down and tucks towards shelter. If she's earned her place, her seeds, the tough bird will take them, snap for them. Her body is not dry or stuffed, not carved, not left over. It courses with systems, one that circulates, sending blood with its sugar and air, one that reproduces, composing shell, cell by cool cell, pushing out a life to wrap in a wing in weather, and one that shoots current nerve to nerve, shivers of pleasure in seeds and heat and children, alarm when an arm reaches for her body to make her body something carved, something left over. You know, right now in our culture, it is considered eccentric to feel the way I think that I feel about the connection between humans and other animals. And I started thinking about that word eccentric. And it's from the Greek, ek, out of, kentros, center. And I ended up writing just a little poem that I'll close with called Eccentric. Dangling from the center's ledge, leaning on the center to nudge it over, stroking the center's back, weeping, staring cross-armed at the center, heaving a shroud over it, walking away until the center disappears.
The poetry of Gretchen Primack from her book, Kind. Thank you so much for coming. It was wonderful.
I loved being here. Thank you, Jan.
You've been listening to Prosody, a weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the arts entertainment newsweekly published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Ellen Wadey. Our sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in Saturday mornings at 6:30 for Prosody 90.5 FM.